Now, empathy is misunderstood. So I'll share that empathy isn't actually the act of kindness. Okay, so like it's not the act. It's the ability to pick up the feelings of other people accurately, which allows you to give someone a hug if you know they need it. Okay, so it's sort of the way I like to explain it is that it's human radar. And human radar is absolutely essential in any organization working with any people, whether a nonprofit, Fortune 500, whether you're a solopreneur, okay? Empathy is essential. You have to understand other people's feelings. It's the chemistry that you're putting together and trying to solve whatever they're going through, right? And so the ability to understand that, and it's very difficult for some professionals, some businesses, who only use 5 cents data to understand the world.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here with Michael Scrow. Michael, what's up, man? How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Dude, you're a breath of fresh air. You're a bundle of energy. I'm happy to be here with you. Stole this from your LinkedIn, but you're a certified professional coach, a leadership educator, a mentor and recruiter, a recruiter of superheroes. Let me get that right. A recruiter of superheroes. We'll dive deeper, but let's start there, Michael. What is a recruiter of superheroes?
Well, as a child of the 80s, I watched very religiously Super Friends, and there was a Hall of Justice. And so I sort of think of myself as Wonder Woman, who has been recruiting people to this Hall of Justice. And so when I think of like the business community or our communities, I'm just constantly in the search for other superheroes, because we're all doing the work, and that energy feeds me, the magicalness of different businesses, different coaches and consultants who are doing their thing, podcasters, whomever. I see them all as superheroes, and I want to know every single one of them. And I want us to all do, you know, the great things that we're all setting out to do. And so that's sort of my framework for that. It makes me talk to everybody and anybody from the barista to the letter carrier. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just always recruiting people to sort of my collective, you know. And then there's also a Borg reference in there too, but I wouldn't say I'm the Borg queen for those Star Trek fans. Definitely not. Everyone has their own individualism, but that could be a vibe too, but I digress.
I love this. I mean, you're always looking for opportunities to meet good people, bring them in, kind of build that tribe of superheroes. We can talk about the, you know, I do this for this stuff, but really what I want to hear first is a little bit about your background, a little bit about the why behind your love of leadership and recruitment of superheroes and love of people and love of, you know, developing humans and the human condition. Where does this all come from, Michael?
Gosh, great question. And I have to, track it all the way back again to the 80s, where as a kid on the north side of Syracuse, I was somebody who just was very engaging. I got into mischief because I had a lot of curiosity. You know, when we think about leadership, the word curiosity is always very much linked to traits in leadership. And so as a kid, I just would, again, collect people. I would say, hey, let's all go to the park and you know, I'd get arts and crafts materials, and then I'd like tell the whole group, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to do boondoggles, and this is how you do it. or we'd have books from teachers during the summer, and I would like hold class at the park with the school books that I had. So I've just always sort of felt like leadership, curiosity, education, community has always been sort of my vibe. Now, I wouldn't have called it all that way as a kid.
Yeah.
But when I look back and see the kinds of activities, the things I got into, it was always those sort of values I demonstrated, you know. And I remember watching a cartoon, again, people my age would know it, called The Get Along Gang. And the Get Along Gang were all these different animals that would come together and, you know, solve mysteries and, you know, get along. And I just thought, wow, how awesome is that? Well, in our local paper, there was a Get Along Gang kit you can order. And so, of course, I ordered it. It cost like $7. And so I was the moose in the Get Along Gang as the person who got the kit. And so everyone had a role to play. And as far as I remember, it was just designed to kind of really develop leadership skills as kids. And so ever since then, I just sort of always gone back to that as sort of my reference point, because throughout my career in education mostly, I've always used those same values in the way I was, no matter what kind of work I did within the education space. And so that's really formative for me. And that's sort of where it all comes from. That's my why. I've always been sort of that kid who is helpful. And the other reference point I'd make is when I was in college, I was an RA, a resident assistant. And so that's always stuck with me, is that I'm that person. I'm like the person down the hall you ask help from. And so, you know, whether I'm walking in the streets of downtown Syracuse, I just always have that sort of like impression on people that I'm the person you ask if you need help. Because I'll help you. I'll always say yes, you know. And so that's sort of like another way of thinking about leadership, is that RA role that I played.
Yeah, it's, you were the moose, you were the RA, you were curious. And it sounds like whether it's teachable or not, you just kind of have an open energy where people want to walk up and ask you questions. You probably have a big smile on your face, things like that. And I'm wondering, because it's funny how you look back and you're like, oh, I was this person and it serves me well today, but it's not like you were intentionally, you know, doing these things to be a leader, right? I'm wondering specifically the curiosity aspect, because that's something I hear a little bit less in leadership. You know, it's about training a team and it's about, you know, managing processes and it's about leading by example, things like that. But curiosity, talk a little bit about curiosity, because that's a different answer than a lot of people might give.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the research I've done and sort of what I've experienced in my general career is that the curious one is empathetic and sort of showcasing, I think, a leadership trait. A lot of us listen to respond, right? And so if you're curious, you really want to hear what someone else thinks or what someone else believes. And so that curiosity for me has always been sort of like a hallmark feature of leadership development. And I try to espouse that as much as possible myself, because I think of the work, and this might be news, I have sort of reframed mentorship to be mentor to mentor. And so I don't even think of my work as I'm a mentor to others who are mentees. I see them as mentors to me. And so I really love this philosophy that we all have something to teach, something to learn. And again, if you've got curiosity, your willingness to explore that is probably going to happen. And so that framework for me really works. And curiosity is sort of the value that we practice, that other people can feel, they can get from you. You know, I share with people all the time, you know, if you're getting frustrated with your boss or something's going on at work or your spouse, ask a question. Ask a question. You could go no wrong by, but not many of us do that when we're stressed out. We make a comment. Or what we believe, right? Mm. So if we lean in with curiosity, you're more likely to resolve whatever's going on. And so that curiosity piece is probably something that I don't say a lot about, but it's sort of the linchpin to the frameworks and the concepts I use in coaching.
I love this. So it is the linchpin. It's in everything you do. You're forever curious. I love the mentor to mentor concept. Cause let's say anyone has a team and, you know, they're at the top of the ladder in the team, whatever totem pole, I still think it should be as wide as possible. Right. But the person who might be at the top, they're not going to be as good at the day-to-day stuff as everyone, you know, working with them. So they might have some, you know, more long-term knowledge or more experience, but they don't understand the day-to-day, right? So in a way, a brand new employee with a specific skill probably has a tremendous amount that they can teach someone who's been in the industry 20 years, and vice versa, right?
Yes. In fact, I'm trying single-handedly with other partners to dismantle that. The sort of that fabric of like the way business is conducted, like the new person, you know, fell off the turnip truck and they know nothing, right? Like, no, they absolutely have something to teach, not just learn, you know? And so reframing sort of like onboarding programs to be more mentorship programs where the legacy employee is also learning from the new person. Whatever part, you know, wherever they sit in that totem pole, right? Maybe that person really believes in the values of the company and they come in practicing those things, but the old time employee is sinister and just, you know, and jaded, right? And so that new person could show them a little bit more hustle and sort of like being a truest believer, you know? But legacy employees really get bent on the idea that they know where all the forms are and sort of like how to do the widget making. But that's not what your culture is, right? So for me, new people are a breath of fresh air, and they are the people that have the most amount of trust because they don't have like the bad thing didn't happen to them 3 years ago, right? And so like we can really learn from new people, no matter what role they're playing and where they sit in the totem pole, you know? And so I think more acknowledgement of that and us learning from each other, whether new, old, young, old, legacy or not, you know, they're just, again, you will if you have curiosity, right? So there it shows its face again.
I love this so much. I don't even know where to start. So it's like someone can be brand new and they might not have the long-term skill set, but if you're recruiting and hiring well, and we're simplifying, it's not always easy, they will be aligned with the company's values. They'll have trust. There'll be a breath of fresh air. They'll bring good energy. And people that might start to kind of be shifting away from the values or forgetting what the core of competency and values are, see this new kid living the truth of the company. It's like, wow, I've got something to learn from. It's almost like for me, ignorance is bliss. The more that I learn, the more I can't sleep at night because of all the things I've learned. And just going in with just pure energy and love and trust and hope for the future and faith for success, that's infectious, isn't it?
100%. And the thing that the new person has to push back on, all right, so for all those new people anyplace, push back on alliance building. All right, because what happens when a new person starts is like all the different camps are trying to recruit you. And then commiserate with you and saying that this one over here is blah, 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 and you should be in our camp, right? And so I say, you know, push that all back. Push all that back. As a new person, don't join a camp. Show all the people the way forward with their own values, right? And so that could be hard for some because we want to fit in, you know. But historically, in all my years working, I've never been the person who had a hard time with that. So I know I'm sort of speaking from my own experience and maybe my ability. For some, they want to feel included and will sort of maybe commiserate with the older folks and sort of form those camps. But that's never been my experience. I've always pushed back on that and maybe even created a new camp where wait for it, we're doing the things we're supposed to do at work. Right?
Yes.
You know, that could be crazy to say out loud, but that was like what I saw. I'm like, you're paying me money to do the things and the values that the organization has, right? So that was the my behavioral way of being, right? So those values are always the ways I'm going to show up because that's what they're asking you to do, you know? But a lot of organizations, maybe pre-COVID for sure, those values are on the website. Yeah, you could ask any employee, do you practice these things internally? And they would say, what values, you know? So
right.
I spend a lot of time helping organizations and individuals, you know, in the work I do, practice those things because that's what they say they're all about.
Let's give the listener just a short, easy task. And if you're driving, you're not going to want to do this. But if you aren't driving, in a moment, you'll want to click pause and write down the values of the organization you work for. Let's see if you know them. It's okay if you don't. Most times in my life did not. And if you're a business owner and entrepreneur, what are your values and are you living those? Is that a good task? Is there anything we should add?
That's exactly the task. And then be brave to maybe share those things with your colleagues and take it a step further by setting some expectations. Mm. Right. So Ben and I may practice integrity in both of our businesses. However, we might be practicing it differently. So to make this task next level and include others would be set some expectations, for example, about integrity, if that's one of your values, so that we can make sure we're showing each other that we're practicing it, right? A lot of the rub at work is people may ever be practicing those values, but in different ways. Mm. And so having a clear sort of set of expectations is a great way to add to that activity, but I love it. Don't do it while you're driving. That's right. Do it when you're at a desk or have some paper or pen in hand.
And you can pause and think about it, but don't actually get the pen and paper out if you're driving. This is something that's honestly new to me. And I started to realize once I honed in on my values as a marketer, as a profession, it's so much easier to create content because I just create content that's aligned with those values. So you mentioned setting expectation based on the values because it's going to look different in different organizations. What exactly does that look like? Is there a process to set those expectations?
Yeah, I'd often say if you're working on a team, a department, I mean, I would love if a whole organization could do this together. But if not, start with the leadership team or start with your department where you list those values and then, you know, create three expectations for each of them. So, for example, integrity might be when we see something, we say something, right? That's a demonstration of integrity. Mm-hmm. And now that we're all going to practice that, no one is going to be alarmed when someone says something, right? So the fabric of our behavior is sort of united, and that's what those values can do. I think pre-COVID, for sure, a lot of these values were on the website because it's how we're recruiting clients and customers, right? And I see all of this as an exercise in internal public relations, where we're sort of working together to also treat each other the way that our values tell us, right? Because every single one of us would be very kind to a customer and act with integrity with a customer. Mm-hmm. However, Sally in finance gets hit over the head with your nasty email. Like that's not cool, right? So if we can align all that, we will have a different work experience, you know, with our colleagues because we have those values to unite us and show us the way forward instead of us all sort of doing our own thing whenever we need to.
So for clarification, values aren't just the way you present yourself to your customers and clients. It actually is the culture internally, right?
It's the culture. That's exactly right. So when people ask me what the culture is, it's the culture is the most behavior demonstrated by the team. Mm. Okay, the most behavior. So if it's an okay place where people are short with each other over email, then that's your culture. Right? Your culture isn't the CEO gets an ice cream truck for your company. That is what we call a perk. That's not your.
In some places, that's a bribe.
Yes, that might be. Yeah, so it's a perk, right? But like, are you chatting with each other collectively and in a kind way at the ice cream truck?
Right.
That would be a demonstration of culture. But the vehicle itself, the ice cream, is a perk. And so we get sort of, you know, thinking that we're, and it's only the responsibility of management to create culture. No, they're to hold it, us accountable to the values, but the majority of employees really set the stage for what the culture is, you know, and it's always been my experience. Like even when I shared with you what I did as a kid, I created culture in our neighborhood by setting activities and kindness and educating and whatever it was I was trying to do. And I did that through my career as just sort of create this nucleus of people who had a lot of influence over the organization, even if I was the lowest person on the totem pole. Mm. And when I was doing it in my career, I had no idea I was doing it. Okay. It's only looking back, I recognized that when you actually practice the values, it actually influences other people. And they say, I want to be part of that.
Mm.
Eventually, everyone is part of that. And the people that, you know, don't want to be part of it will probably quit, which is fine. Right. But that's really how we change the culture. It's not a set of trainings. It's really the values. And if you get more people swimming in the same direction at the same time, at the same speed, you'll be unstoppable. Because even the other fish will decide to jump in because they're seeing that you're hitting your goal. You know, I'm and this might be rights infringement, so I'm sorry to Disney, but in the movie Finding Nemo, if you recall the scene where Dory's caught in the net with all the other fish and they're being scooped into out of the sea. And little Nemo says, well, Dory, start swimming down, you know. And so Dory and Nemo start swimming down. And then some other fish see that they're swimming down and join in. Some hear it and join in. Some fish don't do anything until the net starts moving. All right. And then those fish join in and eventually get out of the net. This is what organizational health looks like, right? If we're all swimming in the same direction at the same time, at the same speed. And that's how I see culture, right? If we're able to do that and synchronize and calibrate and collaborate, my gosh, you'll be unstoppable. Unstoppable.
You're collaborating, you're synchronized, going same speed, full speed ahead. People just want to join in. They're like, oh my gosh. This kind of reminds me of the phenomenon, and I want people to try this sometime. If you look up to the sky, to the corner somewhere, you just look off into the distance and you're in like a public area, a significant amount of people will see you do it and they'll start looking that way as well. And so if you're looking up in a way, people will be, oh, what's that person? People are curious. They're interested. And if you go to like, you know, the boy who cried wolf, if you're looking up at nothing and people follow you, and if you're not providing any value or collaboration or any of the things we've said, people look up and be, eventually they'll be like, oh, this person just stares off into the distance, but isn't actually looking at anything. But if I look up into the distance and everyone sees a shooting star, they're like, oh, that Ben and Michael, they know how to spot the shooting stars.
That's right.
I've literally never thought of this before. So this is happening. Literally the thoughts are happening as we go, man. But fascinating metaphor as far as I'm concerned. And
well, you're talking about being a visionary. And so that's pretty beautiful, actually. You know, I thought about this when you were speaking about when I lived in New York City, there would always be these lines to like some shop or boutique or some store. And some people got in the lines just because there was a line. Okay. And so like we think about the influencing nature.
Oh, yeah.
How staring up or getting in a line meant like there's something great at the end of that line. Right. And so like, but it takes folks to be visionary to kind of sort of create those opportunities. Right. So that people get something out of it. Right. So you see the person walking out of the store with their new iPhone or whatever the thing might be. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's a reason why there's a line there. But some people join because they've been influenced to do so. Right. And so whether that's clever marketing or people's natural ability to influence others, right? That swimming in this direction is going to be the best thing for us as a group, right?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. And I'm digressing, but one thing that's funny is I've always been the one that gets in the line that has no one in it. I think ever since I was a kid, you know, I was bullied and gaslighted at times and I kind of felt small. And I really align and can relate to the underdog. And I don't necessarily think that the fried food place with the long line is any better than the Thai place next door. So I'm like, I want to bet on this Thai place because there's no line. And guess what happens? If I don't like it, I just don't go there again. No harm, no foul. But that's my digression of the day, as if, well, I've already had like three or four. But so we had mentioned in the front, we talked about curiosity and that just kind of being embedded in everything you do, but not being like one of the core things you teach. And a lot of the things we've talked about seem like they're just embedded in your life every day, but maybe not the core competencies you teach. So I kind of want to hone it back in. Are there any specific core competencies that you see from just the most ambitious, successful leaders? Well, what are some of these competencies that you like to teach?
Yeah. So the first and foremost competency that people walk away and a coaching experience with me is certainly an empathy. You know, an empathy is a core component of emotional intelligence. Now, empathy is misunderstood. So I'll share that empathy isn't actually the act of kindness. Okay. So like, it's not the act. It's the ability to pick up the feelings of other people accurately, which allows you to give someone a hug if you know they need it. Okay. So it's sort of the way I like to explain it is that it's human radar. And human radar is absolutely essential in any organization working with any people, whether a nonprofit, Fortune 500, whether you're a solopreneur, okay? Empathy is essential. You have to understand other people's feelings. It's the chemistry that you're putting together and trying to solve whatever they're going through, right? And so the ability to understand that, and it's very difficult for some professionals, some businesses, who only use 5 cents data to understand the world. All right. So those of us who use intuition more naturally do have a bit of an advantage because they have those muscles pretty rehearsed. All right. But those folks who only use their 5 senses to understand things, for example, empathy, your employee's really sad, but the person hasn't said to you they're sad. So the person who only uses 5 cents data will miss the opportunity for a conversation, a hug, some sort of support. Whereas a Michael Scrow of the world, one who trusts his gut, will pick up someone needs a hug today or an opportunity to talk, right? And trusting that. But it is intuitional in its nature because feelings are intuitional. They're feelings. They're not data, or they're not facts, right? They're not things that you can write down and say. They're emotional, right? And so that's what I really help a lot of people with at its core, right? So even if you do use your intuition and you might know that someone is hurt, well, is it the right time to talk to them about it? Mm-hmm. That's another layer of this, right? So you might have the intuitional knowledge, but it's also, what is it that you actually say? What is it you actually do with that employee? And so I think foundationally, it's about empathy for me. And so if there was 3 parts to all the things I help people with, first,
we can we dive slightly deeper into empathy and then we'll go into the other two?
Yeah.
Because this it seems like a real life superpower that, again, the superheroes you're looking for, they probably all have this, right? How do I hone this skill? It's a skill, right? I can get better at it, right? What do I do?
Yes. Thanks for sharing that to go deeper on this because I think it's
essential.
Empathy is a core component of emotional intelligence. And so let's back up by saying that there's 4 elements to emotional intelligence, 4 skill sets. to really make emotional intelligence sort of pop and be in your favor, right, in terms of your performance. The first two areas have to do with you and your own emotional management, all right? So self-awareness and self-management skills, all right? Empathy is locked in with sort of the external world and other people's feelings and matched with relationship skills, all right? So that's the actual action steps about what you learn through empathy. So to better hone your empathy skills, you have to pay attention to people, their body language, right? You know, and this is something I had to hone over time because I was guilty of bringing a party to a funeral, all right? Where literally walk into a funeral and I'm like, hey, Bob, good to see you, you know, even though Susan has passed, okay? Like you have to know.
Yeah.
What the vibe is in the room, right? Whether it's a Zoom call or an actual room with people. And so body language is important to observe, people's expressions, the tone of their voice, where they're looking, right? All of these are indicators about things to pay attention to with people. Someone is demonstrating what I call non-behavior. Right. So you're used to someone always saying good morning when you pass their desk and they don't say good morning that day. That's an indicator something has changed. Right. So it's an observational thing, but it's also looking at your history with the person. If there's something that's different or not happening that happens, it might be an indicator that they're upset with you. Right. Because they didn't say good morning when they usually say good morning. So paying attention to all of that is the way that we can strengthen that muscle. You know, and I help people with practicing consciously their competency, so competency and empathy, but you have to practice it a while before it becomes an unconscious mastery thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so for those of you who might have a candle, all right, if you put your hand over the candle, your hand moves, right? Because you don't want to get burned, right? But that's your unconscious working, okay? Consciously, you're not evaluating, should I move my hand, right? Your unconscious takes over. So I like to simplify unconscious behavior to be your autocorrect.
Ooh. Okay?
And so when we use our autocorrect, you know that it doesn't always get it right. Right.
No, it doesn't.
Another word that you really meant, right? So right. In order to change our empathy level in terms of competency or any skill, you have to practice. It's forming a new habit. So it becomes habitual for you. So then your unconscious will practice it. But that's the level of work what I do with folks is that we have to spend time with it. We have to look at it. We have to say, ooh, those crunches weren't exactly the crunches. You have to go another 30 degrees in the other direction, right? To get the abs that you want, right? To make sure it's the skill that you want, right? So it's that sort of nuance you have to do to really level up these skills. Because mostly I will say I work with high performing people who are looking and seeking excellence and mastery. And this kind of mastery just takes nuance and time. In order to really get there. So that's, I would say, I hope that answered the question about
it. It does.
Really any skill. It takes that kind of practice and precision.
It takes the precision, nuance, time. You can achieve mastery overnight. And wow. So I want to do like a 10 part episode. So I want to hear the other competencies, but while we're at this, cause I'm going to want to dive deeper after this call. How do people get in touch with you? How do they learn more about this stuff and ask you a question? Cause I have 10 more questions, but I want to be mindful of time and tackle the other competencies as well. How do people get in touch? We'll drop some information right now.
I'm social media. It's mostly Coach Scro is the handle. Or michaelscro.com.
Spell that.
michaelscro.com. If you Google me, you will find a lot about me. I have done a good job of, I call it polluting the internet with good things. And so you'll find a lot of articles, podcasts, photos. I do take a good selfie, everybody. So feel free to click on that selfie to find links or information. But it's pretty readily available on the internets.
Love it. Love it. Polluting the world with good things. It's like that clutter that you can't get rid of because it makes you smile. I have tinctures all over my house like that.
That's right.
So I wanted to dive deep into empathy, but I do want to tackle, you mentioned you've got two other competencies you focus on regularly. Where should we start?
Yeah. So I think one is just your behavior, right? So a lot of people, what I found through all my coaching is that the new issue that people don't know they have is that they double down on their strengths in places where they don't need them.
Hmm.
Right. So most of us sort of traverse our career and we're promoted for our strengths. All right. But somewhere along the line, someone decided, and you know, if you go on Instagram, you'll see this, that focus on your strengths and ignore your weaknesses. All right. And that's sort of been the adage, you know. Here's the thing: to be a high performing leader, you have to look at what those other opportunities are for you to level up. All right. Because your strengths can't bail you out of everything. All right. I'm going to give you an example. So my strength has been inspiration. I'm an inspirational speaker. All right. But when I work with clients, I can't just rely solely on inspirational speak. I need to sometimes share facts and information. Sometimes I need to listen. And sometimes I need to be direct. All right. So the evaluation of our strengths is actually part of our competency development. It's looking at what are those areas that are strong for you. And we're not going to touch those, but we don't need to work on those, right? We need to look at other behavioral traits that you might be missing. So it's a color coding system. And so for me, I teach people, are you a yellow, a red, a blue, or a green? Okay. I'm a high yellow, you know, and so when I was coach, I needed to learn a lot about the blue area, okay, because analytical skills, reading the book was not the thing I did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a watch the movie person. Okay. And so really working through people's ability to look at their strengths and then what are those areas of growth that they also need for their level of leadership in the organization or as an entrepreneur. So that's one whole nugget is just behavioral aspects of ourselves. And I think of it as addition is what we're doing in that space. We're not doing deletion. We love your strengths, but your strengths are also a blind spot. All right. So if I were to only meet with clients and inspire them and never give them information, that wouldn't be effective. Right. So I have to find a place for inspirational speak and not just use it because I'm good at it. I have to find homes for it and maybe dole it out in different ways.
You don't just start inspirationally speaking at the funeral. It's not a right. good place for that.
That's right. You know, you have to meet the need of the room in that space. And then the other sort of aspect is emotional intelligence. So that's where I've spent, I think I'm in the region, I'm well known as sort of the person you hire for emotional intelligence work. And I think this stuff is the secret sauce. Our ability to take care of our feelings, ability to acknowledge other people's feelings and like run with that. You know, I think COVID has really given us a lot of transparency about the emotional wellness of our employees. Mm-hmm. And from a skill standpoint, we can do something with that, right? So I always encourage employers to use emotional intelligence assessments when hiring people, giving them the tools they need to be successful because the world is harder, you know? And so we bring, you know, our whole selves to work, even if we're working remotely. And we need better tools to help facilitate the kind of wellness we want in employment. So I love that whole area. That's, I think of it as a secret sauce. But you have to have, in a lot of ways, the organizations I work with or individual clients, there's got to be a good level of trust and rapport in order to do that work because we're talking about feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that stuff just takes time to sort of unpack with people. But we get there and I love it. I think it's the most important thing.
It lights you up. It's important. And you mentioned there are tools. We've tackled a lot of them today. Are there any tools in the whole world of emotional intelligence that I might not be using or I might have? I might already have the tool, but I don't know how to use it yet. Does anything come to mind?
Can I share two?
Please. Yeah.
One is
you could say you could share 22, Michael. I could do this with you all day.
So one is considering every kind of communication that you have with anybody, whether it's through email, over Zoom, in person, Morse code, smoke signals, is to utilize empathy. Mm. And to utilize empathy, Daniel Goleman says there's three different types. All right. And I simplify his types to this. I see you. I feel you. I help you. If you can use those three types in any iteration, one of them, two of them, three of them, and every time you communicate with another person or group of people, you will have a more effective conversation.
I see you. I see you. I feel you. I help you.
I help you. All right. Now, there's some blind spots associated with this. So, for example, I think that nurses do a good job with I feel you. Okay. But they might overdo it. Right. So if you are really hurt at the loss of a patient, you have to know where you start and stop with your feelings. Right. So like, while that's a great strategy, right, you have to also know where the line is in over-identifying with someone else's feelings or hurt. Okay. So there is a bit of a something that you have to know about that one. And then the third one, I help you. There's another trap, which is what people call tough love, where they insist on helping someone. And the other person isn't in on it. That's no longer a compassionate response. Okay. So if you're going to offer help, hey, Ben, you know what we could do, blah, 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 blah. And you say, yeah, I'm all in. Then that's, I help you. Okay. But you have to get the other person's permission to be in on it. All right. So I see you, I feel you, I help you is absolutely going to work. But there are some caveats to these. It's not just as simple as the nice saying, right? And then as a separate strategy, fix a broken conversation. Fix a broken conversation. And so the way that I do that, that's my favorite way, for me anyways, is asking people for a do-over. All right. I remember as a kid asking folks, I'm sorry, that was weird. Can I get a do-over, right? So in the same way as kids, when we ask for a do-over, people usually say yes. You know I've had meetings that went awry. And the next day I might say, hey, you know, I wasn't in the right headspace. I said some things that were weird and not the right thing to do. Can we have that meeting over again? Right? Can I get a do-over? And in all of my 25 years working, I never heard someone say no to that. Hmm. All right. Now, ideally, we wouldn't have a conversation that gets broken anyways, right?
Right.
So like, can we sort of advance some of that so that you don't land there? But if you do land there, something heads south with somebody, find a way to repair it. And what I usually recommend is ask for a do-over and be sincere about it. Be sincere about it. And it tends to work versus creating some issue with someone at work. And, you know, for 7 years, all they think about is that time you were a jerk in a meeting, right? Like that just can't stay. Like we can fix that, right? And I've seen too many examples in my own career or also I've heard about where people have been upset about something for like 10 years. And it's like, oh no.
Wow. Yeah.
Right? Like, you bring that to the table every single time you see that person, that's not healthy and it's robbing you of capacity for success. It does not rob the other person by having ill feelings for them because it's your feelings, right? And then you're not going to accomplish all the things that you need to accomplish, right?
Right.
In particular, we're even working with that person. So fix a broken conversation and use, I see you, I feel you, I help you. You're going to be in good shape.
And take the do-over, ask for a mulligan. It's,
yes.
I love this. So obviously you're not going to recommend asking for a do-over every day, multiple times a day, just being the person that always needs a do-over. But as you were talking, I was thinking about and kind of having an emotional reaction, thinking about times when I felt like I needed a do-over or I kind of wish that someone asked me for a do-over because I was harboring anger or resentment towards something specific. And just the line to me, like it's almost like romantic and fun for me. Like, can we please have a do-over because of this? Like, that's bold. That's vulnerable and ambitious, isn't it?
Yes, it's the most purest form of relationship building. Mm. I need you. I want you to help me. I want you to support me. I want to do this with you, right? And something happened that's getting in the way of that.
Right.
It is very vulnerable, yes. And so I would say the caveat to that strategy is there has to be some trust there. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a level of trust or a level of vulnerability. So yeah, it's not something you would practice every day with everybody.
Right.
You would do it with the people that you trust or you want trust with, right? Mm. Even if that's the organization, right? The trust for your supervisor, your boss, or your employee, those are relationships that have to work. They have to work. And so then we would be a little bit more trusting and a little bit more vulnerable with those people to make that work.
Michael, where do you learn this stuff?
So, gosh, I was sort of in the self-help section when it wasn't cool.
So sure.
Late 90s, I remember being at bookstores where the self-help section was the like, you know, there's tumbleweeds like blowing by. And people would get those books and go to other parts of the bookstore. Now those books are on the front of the bookstore, right? And so I spent, I don't know, 10 years sort of really learning the teachings of Mother Teresa, Gary Zukav, Cheryl Richardson, Debbie Ford. I watched every episode of Oprah. Okay. I am a graduate of the School of Oprah.
Yes.
All of those things really prepared me with understanding what the issues were. And then I spent 20 years in higher education. So I worked with people who were leveling up their skills, right? Both at the student level, the graduate level, and with our graduate communities, our alumni. And so I've been exposed to a lot of how and learned the how of these matters. I do have a psych degree. I do have a business coaching certification, project management certification, a behavioral assessment certification, right? So I've got also frameworks of how I know a lot of the things too. But I've always been, here's a thought.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time, we've told people in interviews, don't say you're a people person. Do you know what I do? I tell everyone I'm a people person. All right. Because there is value to that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so in organizations, we need people, you know? And so I kid around with folks when they ask me what I do, I say, I teach people how to people. All right. And I think that that's valuable. And I think it's a necessary set of skills. We've called them soft skills. We should call them essential skills.
Right.
Because the company or organization you're in is going to teach you the technical stuff. They're going to teach you how to make your widget. They're not necessarily going to teach you the essential skills, right? And so those are the things I hone my, you know, spidey senses antenna on and help people with them, whether informally or formally. You know, I don't just look to make a buck in my work. I do a lot of community development where I might work for a nonprofit for free just to help them with what they need. Speak at different events, colleges, universities, because that's my background. So I say yes to everything. And through that, I'm also learning.
Mm.
So that's how I know, you know, I just don't say no to anything. I'm usually involved in the thing. And I always learn something from it myself, you know, and that's, you know, if I could leave a nugget, the Dunning-Kruger effect is the effect that most of us experience on all of our skills. And so it basically is we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
So the only things that you can do to avoid that on your skill sets is to get feedback and constantly be learning. And so I am just a lifelong learner. I love learning and that helps me. And I love feedback, good, bad, or ugly. I tell people I'm coaching or organizations, tell me everything, everything, because I want to be better. I want to be more effective, you know? And so a lot of what you might be experiencing now is because a lot of people give me feedback and mm-hmm. I was able to take that feedback and learn from it and just present a better case for skill development, empathy, and all the things.
You're growing. You have not arrived. You're taking the feedback. you're learning, you have the hows, you have the knowledge, but you're actually applying it, which is tremendously more important. I love how you mentioned soft skills. I've never liked that term. It almost sounds a little demeaning or insulting. They're essential skills. I like that term. What about calling them superpowers?
Yes. See, Ben, you got to know me. Yes, that's, in fact, that's what I believe they are. You know,
yeah.
Absolutely. In my office, in another part of my office, there are mythical creatures on the wall. And so there's a unicorn, and then above that is a Pegasus, and above that is a Pegacorn. Because I believe that all the people I work with walk in as a unicorn. You're already got superpowers, all right? So we're not saying you don't. And then you realize, oh, you have wings. You didn't realize you had wings. So you can fly, right? And so we practice flying. And then you realize, oh, gosh, if I've got wings and a horn, I'm a Pegacorn. You have all of the superpowers. You have, but we unpack that potential here and sort of have you earn your wins, your ahas in that. And I think that is a great framework for learning versus me telling you. Right. So I don't tell anyone anything.
Right.
We discover these things together. Right. And then folks have ahas and like, oh, I'm willing to work on that. Great. Let's do it.
But Michael, I'm grateful for you. I wish we could do another hour. We're going to go super rapid fire just to get to know you a little bit better. Either or, fill in the blank questions, cross them out, say whatever you want. It's up to you. And we'll start with coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Cats or dogs or fill in the blank?
Dogs.
Favorite season?
Spring.
Spring. Let's do a couple longer ones. So three people, live or dead, you get to have coffee, sit back, have a dinner party, just spend the day from them and talk about leadership and life and love and everything important in the world. Who would you want at that dinner table?
Okay, the living folks would be Oprah for sure. Ayanna Van Zandt and Jimmy Carter.
Love it. And again, extended answer. I had wrote down in my notes from when we met, Gaga for Syracuse. And you're my neighbor in Syracuse. What do you mean by Gaga for Syracuse? Talk a little bit about Syracuse and why you're Gaga for it.
Well, I'm also Lady Gaga in Syracuse.
Actually,
technically, I'm more a Kelly Clarkson, where I'm single but not alone, for all you folks out there thinking about my life. But really, I upstate New York as a general matter, from the West to Syracuse. What I know for sure is that there's folks with a growth mindset really pushing the envelope in their communities. And I know I'm one of those people here in Syracuse that are trying to turn the corner from a fixed mindset. A lot of upstate New York, that's having been born, raised here, educated here. I know that we have. And so I finally feel we've turned the corner on that. And while we might be only at 51%, it's more than not. And so I'm Gaga for Syracuse because I see the vision and I'm part of that vision and I'm helping with my part of doing that. And I just would always encourage anyone in any community where you're feeling like, I want to move, do something to make it a place that you want to live, work, do business in, raise a family in. And all of us have that potential. And so I spent a lot of my time in nonprofit work, proper volunteering, where those are the messages and those are the things I'm doing to uplift our community. I love Rachacha, Syracuse, Buffalo. I think we're onto something, all of us in upstate. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that let's keep going and let's find each other to make those connections and know that we're not the only ones doing it, right? We're all kind of tethered together.
Let's keep going. I appreciate you. I appreciate the conversation. Tell us once more, what should be our next step to make a friend, whether it's social media, email, website? Do you do any virtual workshops, anything like that? Give us some action steps because we want to learn more.
Yeah. Well, at the very least, add me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn is sort of like, that's how you know me. All the things are there. You can see my resume. You can see testimonials. You can see pictures of my dog. All the things are available via LinkedIn. I do a lot of free and low cost activity. The one I would spotlight that I started during COVID, and we've had over 1,200 people participate from around the country, is a free emotional intelligence series. And so the series is offered every other month at 7:30 a.m. on Wednesday mornings. And we do an hour on all four areas of emotional intelligence. And that series just jazzes me. It's online, so there's no barrier to entry here, except if you live in California. It's too early for those folks. We've gotten people from Nebraska, Texas, Utah, all in New York State, Maine, right. Vermont. So that would be a great, if you want to get a taste of the magic and my favorite topic, emotional intelligence, that's a great thing to subscribe to. So our next one's going to be in May. And so if you go to michaelscrow.com or any of the links I share pretty routinely, that'd be a great way to kind of have an entry point to see what I'm all about, how I do what I do. And if there's something more that we could do together, yeah, let's do it.
Love it. And all those notes will be in the show notes. This won't come out till like early June. I should have told you that in advance. But I guarantee, guys, you missed the May, you missed out, you'll be at the next one. I'm excited, man. I'll attend. And I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation. It's been a lot of fun.
Same. You're the best. Really. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.